11. You're listening to Bikini Drive-In on CKUW 95.9 FM Winnipeg. I'm joined once again by Jill. Hi, Jill.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. Yeah. I got tested for COVID this morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, no, I feel, it hurts. It smarts. Oh. It's a very uncomfortable procedure. But it feels relieving that I was able to get it done.
Good. Well, yeah, thank you so much for recording with me today when you're not feeling
so great. I'm happy to have something to take my mind off of my burning nasal passage.
Oh, no. Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screen and media studies, arts criticism, and women and gender studies. Our knowledge and experience will hopefully provide you with access points to feminist theory, art history, and film critique while using horror and science fiction genres as a site of discourse. Since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning, listener discretion is advised, etc. Also, spoilers ahead. Today, we are discussing James Cameron's 1986 film, Aliens.
You're going out there to destroy them, right? Not to study. Not to bring back.
That's the plan.
All right, I'm in.
There's still no contact with the colony. The xenomorph may be involved.
What exactly are we dealing with here?
Just one of those things managed to wipe out my entire crew.
Ready to get it on.
Go! I think we got something here.
Ripley, don't be afraid. Come on.
I don't know how you managed to stay alive, but these soldiers are here to protect you.
It won't make any difference.
What is that?
I don't know.
Nobody touched nothing.
I got signals. I got readings. There's something moving and it ain't us.
Get them out of there!
Let's go!
Ellen Ripley is rescued by a deep salvage team after being in hypersleep for 57 years. The moon that the Nostromo visited has been colonized, but contact is lost. This time, colonial marines have impressive firepower, but will that be enough? Jill, what's your history with Aliens?
The first time seeing Aliens was honestly just the other week after like my millionth rewatch of Alien, the first film, and then our subsequent taping of the show. And I wanted more Sigourney and Ripley and escapist films to watch while I procrastinate doing all my schoolwork. So yeah, but I found it to be such an action movie, and I was so stressed out, and I could barely like watch the ending. I was so
yes, and yeah, I didn't realize this was your first viewing. Very cool, but yeah, it's very aggro and stressful, more so I think than the first one. Basically, anything with a countdown really stresses me out.
Yeah.
Can't deal with it. So I just want to go over abjection again, which we talked about last week when we were talking about Alien. But here's just a little review. So according to Julia Kristeva in The Powers of Horror, the abject refers to the human reaction to a threatened breakdown in meaning caused by the loss of distinction between subject and object, or between self and other. The primary example is the corpse, which traumatically reminds us of our own materiality. So in Alien, the first one, which we talked about last week, the abject manifested in the physicality of the xenomorph and its sort of monstrous desire, sexuality drive. Also, it compares the sterility of space versus the physicality of the xenomorph. It's covered in goop, has such a physical and visceral creature that they're confronted with in their airtight, stuffy, and sterile environment. In Aliens, the abject manifests in the queen xenomorph's continuous and sort of monstrous birth and pregnancy process. And I have a quote here from Kristeva. Giving birth, the height of the bloodshed and life, scorching moment of hesitation between inside and outside, ego, other, life and death, horror and beauty, sexuality, and the blunt negation of the sexual. So just a bit on the queen, and just discussing mothers in general. The xenomorphs are interesting because while they share different roles within the colony, their gender isn't stated. The facehuggers in both the first one and the sequel have both phallic and yonic qualities, while they both penetrate and impregnate. Also, any human body, regardless of gender, can be a maternal body. The queen isn't necessarily a female character either. The label of female is put upon her by the human characters, as Ripley calls her a bitch, which is always, especially in this sense, coded as female. And again, this goes back to the idea of the abject too, that where the aliens are frightening because they exist beyond this gender binary. Yeah.
Something that I became really interested in and wanted to do more research while I'm in procrastination mode is this ovipositor, which there's that scene with Ripley confronting the mother, the queen, alien, xenomorph creature, and you can see this, like, very wild-looking, tubular, tube-like organ that she uses to store and lay the eggs for insects. This organ is used to attach the egg to the surface. However, there's more parasitic species like wasps and bees and ants, apparently, where it's also this, like, piercing venomous organ. So, like, how rich is that? So it holds this, like, if we're looking at, you know, I don't know, examples of abject, like, this this device or this organ holds this very interesting quality.
The sort of, like, duality where it's, like, used to continue the species while at the same time as, like, a weapon.
Yeah, right? I love it.
Yeah. So last week we didn't really cover the operating system of the Nostromo, which is called Mother, very much. So I'd just like to discuss Hilary Bergen's essay, I Blush If I Could, Digital Assistants, Disembodied Cyborgs, and the Problem of Gender. So in her research discussing the female cyborg, Bergen argues that the way we treat virtual women can also affect how people behave towards real women. The female cyborg's design hinges on the patriarchal, profit-driven implementation of symbolic femininity, such as a feminine voice, sort of caregiving role of mother, as we see in the first film, accompanied by an erasure of the female body, betraying the ways in which even incorporeal, supposedly post-human technologies fail to help us transcend the gendered power relations that continue to govern real human bodies. And I have a quote here from Bergen. Very quickly, you're tempted to test her boundaries, flirt with her, or see if she can take abuse. These types of sadistic impulses are natural, but alarming when you consider that you're doing this to a feminized interface. If the way we interact with feminized apps and interfaces doesn't translate directly to the way we treat women, it at least naturalizes the idea that women are suited to such roles. So this is seen in Alien and Resident Evil with the way that the Red Queen is treated and the chess game computer in The Thing, where these gendered sort of virtual characters are often called bitches. And they have this sort of feminine interface and voices and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
I find the Ash, I guess, in the first film, but then also especially Bishop. The character of Bishop in this second film, I find really troubles this, like, relationship of cyborg relationality. So, I mean, this film does have a sense of technophobia, I feel like, as did the other one, which is really common with other action and science fiction films of this time. Like, technology advancing at this alarming rate, it's no surprise that there was and still is, like, a certain queasiness about human and android relations. So how Ripley perceives Bishop can also be representative of a fearful reaction to the presence of an other, or we could also just articulate Bishop as an abject kind of creature, living between the cyborg and the human. Yeah, but there is a sense of this, quote, high-tech racism and android apartheid, quote, throughout the Alien series. Now, I'm not exactly sure what my stance on it is. I've really only seen these two films, and I'm way more familiar with the first one. But I do think that this technophobia aspect is quite interesting. And, I mean, both android creatures, Ash and Bishop, are men. I mean, if a robot can be compartmentalized or, like, explained as such. Well, many digital interfaces or cyber beings normalized in society are female, as, you know, Bergen discusses. Like, there's Siri, there's Rosie the Robot Maid, and Alexa, and Samantha and her, and Joy in the new Blade Runner, Chris Stetton in the old original Blade Runner, and I mean, lest we forget, Maria, a.k.a. Machinimensch in Metropolis. And there's these, like, intelligent virtual assistants and guides and hosts and therapists, and they're, like, practically canonized. I mean, I imagine that a lot of this, comes down to gender stereotypes of who is doing this labor, especially in regards to affective labor, who's being denied humanity. So there are perhaps some perspectives that could argue that this power that these creatures have is beyond human, even. Mm-hmm. But obviously, as Bergen addresses, I can't help but feel that most of these parts are written or created of a certain impression or subservience.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I feel like Bishop is really interesting in that he does travel that. Like, mm-hmm. he consistently plays this martyr kind of will, working to save the crew and to save Ripley and to save Newt. And granted, he's not in the same domestic realm as the androids listed above, but he is kind of an exception to the militant and, like, emotionally repressed or stripped role that he's programmed for. Like, he's this little pocket of humanity, oddly enough, in an otherwise quite, like, militant and aggro film. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't really have a point. Yeah. I really enjoyed his character, his arc in the film in a way that I didn't expect. And I find him to be maybe I'm being hyperbolic, but I think that I find him to be the most interesting character in this film. Ripley, obviously, in the first one is, but I found in this film, Ripley is, and I mean, we'll talk about it more as we get into Mother and we get into like nuclear family dynamics, but I found Bishop to be really intriguing.
Interesting, and yeah, to build on your point about the sort of nuclear family unit that we see at the end of the film, like I've heard on other podcasts such as Faculty of Horror, where you know, women are usually sort of portrayed in this sort of mothering or caregiving role, and so how do you feel about that portrayal of Ripley in this film and her relationship with Newt? Like, do you see it as sort of like a mothering caregiving role, or do you see it as like they're traumatically bonded basically because they're both like have a shared experience of survival?
I mean, yeah, you could articulate it as such, but there's something about like there'd be the scenes where she was comforting her. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I do think that when they first interact and when Ripley is the first person that they're able to connect with, mm-hmm. that makes sense as kind of a level of just understanding, yada yada, but there is something about how Ripley comforts Newt and how it's like there's a cooing and like a very, very motherly how she's holding her. There's like it's the posture of it, there's something about it that is so inherently mother qualities, or these like it's like going by, you know, this like book. Like, it almost, like, I almost was like, like, and so, and I don't know, I mean, what's that, let's unpack that, why that makes me
sad. Yeah, exactly, right, it's like, ew, no.
But yeah, it was like, there's a disappointment. I mean, we get it, a sense in the first one with how Ripley, I feel like the Jones for Cat is also they seem like a bit of a, Newt seems like a bit of a plot point to make Ripley's character more feminized.
Newt is, yeah.
And so that bothered me, I think. Yeah. Like, in the first film, Jones, obviously, in the books, Jones the cat is, like, the narrator. Like, Jones has a very important role beyond being Ripley's pet. And yet how the film depicts Ripley and Jones' relationship, she's often complete. So she's cooing Jones and holding Jones. There's, like, this a tenderness and a touch that's there, and we see that replicated and furthered with how she interacts with Newt in a way that I feel like it's just this attempt to make Ripley's character softer.
Interesting. It's like, I understand wanting to expand the Ripley character in a second film, but the way that they do that is to use this narrative and this child to sort of, soften her, make her more relatable or whatever.
Well, and then also lest we get down to like, I mean, what her interaction with the mother, like that's very meant to be a mother to mother standoff.
Yes.
And then with her and what's the
Hicks. My crush?
It's like there's this kind of idea of them perhaps having a connection, but again that like
Yeah, because they are present. Yeah, they're like a little family unit at the end, and we were talking about this before we started recording. But, I mean, I like that there's tension, but that they don't actually even kiss, or, like, there's no, like, romantic relationship. At the same time, like, why does that tension have to be there? Like, is it to make, is it to, like, raise the stakes? Is that why Newt is there? Is that why Hicks is there? But, yeah, very yeah. heteronormative and...
Yeah. And an implication of romance with, like, him, like, there's that, like, engagement joke or whatever when he gives her the tracker.
Bracelet. Yeah, there's, like, a flirtation between them.
James Cameron. Which again, just for me, it's like, oh right, because this is an action movie.
Yeah, and it's James Cameron, and there has to be like a love story.
Yeah. And also, like, I'm someone who, like, as you know, didn't love this film.
Yeah.
But then there's this dude, Roger Luckhurst, who I'm not familiar with. So, listeners, please don't cancel me. He's like a creep. I really don't know who this dude is. But he's quote stating that. Even if Aliens was a piece of leftist science fiction, the core of its myth could be inflected the other way. James Cameron's Aliens would be a defiantly reignite version of the story. It's pumped, militarized, libertarian, and driven by a staunch defense of the nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I, yeah, it's like, I feel like that's really palpable.
Yeah.
That being said, there is a delightfully weird dynamic with the mother still that continues. So the ship or console, whatever, that, as you mentioned, they're swearing at.
Yeah.
However, in this sequel, yeah, there's like this paternal relationship that, again, I think because of Ripley and Newt's relationship, it's like there's a predictability and a stagnancy to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I found their narrative, their storyline forced to think, as mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it just like, what's this gooey? Like, it just like made me kind of like this.
Yeah.
And the mother standoff between Ripley and the alien, laying her eggs out of her ovipositor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that moment, but then to have Ripley like betray their bit of trust and understanding was so disappointing. Like I was so looking forward to having this like interspecies peace. And of course, like obviously, Jill, that doesn't happen. There's like a million more alien movies. Like,
yeah.
But I really wanted it to, and maybe I'm just, like, reading too much Donna Haraway. Maybe this quarantine is, like, making me cuckoo, and definitely all the above. But I was really desiring this, like, powerful moment of, like, the heck with these corporations. They don't have either of our well-being in mind. And, like, let's band together against them. So, I don't know. If anything, this film kind of, like, proves to me that we should just really obliterate gender roles and, like, mother-father nesting trauma.
Yeah.
One little fun fact
that
I found while doing a little bit of research. Thank you, Wikipedia. So apparently Sigourney Weaver looked to like women identifying heroes of historical China for the character. So specifically for the second installment, which is very much like, as we've discussed, militant warrior-esque and whatever. And one of the personal favorite hero of mine is Qing Shi, who lived between 1775 and 1844. And she was this pirate who commanded over 300 junks. So, you know, those like Chinese pirate ships with the sails that have multiple ribs.
Yeah.
So beautiful. And she challenged like all the empires of her time. So like British, Portuguese, the Qing Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
She was undefeated and was one of the world's most powerful pirates. And she was also one of the few pirate captains to actually retire from piracy.
Oh,
like
amazing.
Most of them would usually like die or get thrown in jail or get hung or whatever. But she just like, they like pardoned her and she just like retired.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. She sounded cool.
Yeah. Just to go back to this idea of like this version of Ripley being softened, I wonder if that has to do with because in the original Alien, Ripley was originally written to be a male character, and at the last minute they decided to gender flip it or whatever. And so this idea of Ripley is kind of just neutral, seems like gender neutral, whereas this one, because she's specifically a female character, yeah, she's given these sort of like female signifiers, like a child and a potential boyfriend or whatever. Just to...
That gets complicated, though, because, like, gender neutrality is, like, what is that?
Yeah, what does that look like?
That's impossible. What is that? And, like, to think, like, cause then we're getting into bigger conversations about, like, yeah, what is gender and what is sort of, like, these coded representations. Yeah, I think it's, like,
complicated. Let us know. Send us an email at bikinidragon at gmail.com or follow us on Facebook and send me a message there. I just wanted to talk about whitewashing. So whitewashing is a casting practice in the film industry in which white actors are cast in non-white roles. So this is seen in the character Vasquez, played by, where's her name? Jeanette Goldstein. So James Cameron went as so far as to give Jeanette Goldstein brown contact lenses and dark makeup. So essentially brown face. So I have a quote here from BloodyDisgusting.com. We should talk about Vasquez. Was the aliens casting problematic? By John Squires. Aside from Ellen Ripley herself, the most badass character in James Cameron's action-packed sequel is Private Vasquez, the toughest nails Marine who is almost always holding a big gun and leading her fellow Marines into battle with the Xenomorphs. What most did not realize at the time, and what many still haven't figured out, is that Vasquez, a Latino woman, was played by Aliens by Jeanette Goldstein, a freckled-faced white actress. It's worth discussing here that Vasquez was well not played by a Latina actress. In an effort to appear less white, Goldstein was outfitted with dark contact lenses to hide her blue eyes, and yes, she was even covered in full face and body makeup to cover her white skin. Which, I didn't realize this until, like, last year, which is such a, like... And that was her first movie, and she's gone on to do so many other things and work with James Cameron and work with Kathryn Bigelow. But... like, why make that character Latina? Why not cast an actual woman of color? James Cameron. It's just, yeah. And it still happens, like, with Ghost in the Shell. They cast Scarlett Johansson, who's a white actress, to play a Japanese character. And it's just, like, it's still happening. So I feel like it's worth talking about, right?
And, like, thinking of the first Aliens film where, like, yeah, there was, you know, an attempt at, like, diversity. But again, it goes to show these, like, intersectional dilemmas of course, it's going to be women, of course, but unfortunately it's women of color who are going to be still...
just completely written out of...
written out of scripts.
Yeah. Or they cast a white lady.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Dope.
Yeah. And again, it's like, it's hard to, you don't always want to, like, judge a movie from 70s, 80s, whenever, with the same lens that we have today. But the fact that it's still happening, it's obviously, like, it's a bummer.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay.
That was the first action film I've seen in a long time.
I think that's the only action movie I like. Except for John Wick. John Wick, the first one, is, like, beautiful.
Oh my god, I've never seen
it. You gotta watch it. I feel like they consulted dancers to do the fight choreography.
That's sweet.
You should watch it. It's beautiful. Anyway, thanks for listening to the show. You can listen to Bikini Drive-In. Thanks so much for coming. You can listen to the show every Sunday at 4:30 on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. You can send us an email at bikinidrivein@gmail.com or send a message over Facebook, just Bikini Drive-In. And, yeah, let us know what you're watching while you stay home and hang out. You watch all the Aliens. Watch all the John Wicks. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
I can feel nothing on the outside is real. Does it really show? All the other kids put you down. No one ever wants you around. No one wants an alien. Never, never thought you could feel. Was never been around. Stand still, or will they ever know? Dreaming of a place far away. You know you were born here astray. Does it really show? Can't make it plain their game. When everyone plays it the same. No one wants an alien. Never, never thought you could feel. Does everything around you stand still? Or will they ever know?
Of our annual budget comes from listeners like you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting CKUW 95.9 FM at FunDrive.
Listener-driven radio, 24/7, CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.